This podcast is brought to you by Infinite Resources, a local staffing agency connecting diverse job candidates in central Iowa companies. Amplified.
Thank you for joining me today.
Oh, thank you.
Bill Rain.
Yes.
Is our guest.
That's correct.
On this new CEO chat, CEO conversation.
CEO chat.
CEO and CEO. That's what we're calling it. You know, we label our seasons. We're on season six. Right.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yes, congratulations.
It just makes it more official.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's great. We, you know. A lot of good seasons under your belt now.
Yeah.
You're well seasoned.
So this one is about leadership, and I've been lucky enough to have worked and know people like yourself that are proven leaders that have been through ups and downs and tenured, you know. You're a young man, so I'm not
I'm really not. Thank you. This gray in my beard is very real. Yeah. You know, I struggle with the idea of making it less gray. I'm trying to be graceful about it as best as I possibly can. But every once in a while I'll look in the mirror and say, man, you got old.
You're there.
Yeah, I'm there. Yeah.
It's quite the realization, isn't it?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, 57 years old, you know, and I just really I wanted to take a big swing at something here, and so I invented this job rides thing, which I know we'll talk about just a little bit, but you do get to be a certain age in your life where you're like, what have I done? Mm. You know, what can I still do? And if I still have a big swing left in me, what will that look like? And so that's what I'm off to. So,
well, let's kind of jump right into it. You know, we were just talking about big decision making.
Yeah.
And how it's not always the one you want to make, but it's the one that you almost like have to make.
Right.
What do you think the biggest mistake a CEO has or does?
Yeah, I think one of the biggest mistakes that somebody can do is paralysis through analysis, where they just kind of linger on a decision. They just go through it. They get advice. They kind of, you know, oh, this and that. Let me talk to you about this. Let me talk to you about this. And then you've kind of gotten the advice, but it's still not the answer you were looking for or hoped that it would be. And so you keep analyzing the problem over and over again instead of making the decision. Mm. Sometimes decisions can be unpleasant. And so we look for, as human beings, ways to make things more pleasant or to make yourself feel better. And what a leader does is they take advice from others, and whatever their gut sometimes might tell them, along with what others tell them, you just have to go with it. Mm. In a paralysis through analysis where you can't move because you're still analyzing things, that can bring a lot of businesses down because you don't want to make the tough decision even though it's the right decision to make.
Yeah. So you made a big decision. You moved on from your business and you started Job Rides, which is a nonprofit.
Yeah.
Can you walk us through those big decisions? I mean, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've been a recruiter for 31 years. And about 2.5 years ago, I decided, well, in 2019, I actually decided to buy a van and then in 2020, I was going to see what happened as far as bringing people to work. And, of course, 2020 happened, and nobody was going to work. So I waited until midway through 2021. And then from 2021 on, I started to take people to work. Started with one van and another van. Then about the third van or so, I'm like, this would work out really well as a not-for-profit organization, because if I made it a for-profit business, I would have to charge people more money, basically. And the people that would that need a ride to work wouldn't be able to afford it. And the people that could afford it don't need a ride to work. And so I'm like, but as a not-for-profit, I could get donations in and grants in, and we could keep the cost down. So for a while, I had one foot in RAIN recruiting, trying to, you know, run my business, my for-profit business, and I had one foot in job rides. And what was happening was I kind of got job rides to as much as I possibly could, unless I made a decision, very difficult decision, of leaving this business. I mean, this business has a lot of personal ramifications to it. I started the business when my wife was still alive and was had breast cancer. And I started it so I could spend more time with her. And so it started with my wife. And then after she died, then I could really do more with the business. And so it has a lot of personal, you know, deals with it. But my heart really, started to go towards helping people get to work.
Right.
The poorest among us, the people that needed the most help. As I peeled back the layers of my of the current transportation system, I'm like, whoa, nobody's doing this. Nobody's helping.
You're becoming an expert in transportation.
Who knew? I mean, what a thing. So at 57 years old, all of a sudden I know a lot about transportation. But in out of the blue. I mean, I don't know if I'm how religious I am, but I'm a little bit of a faith seeker and of a fate seeker, I guess. And out of the blue, I got a phone call. I wasn't looking to sell my business, but I was thinking about what job rides might be in the future. And somebody called and said, "Did you ever think about selling your business?" And I said, "No." And then I started thinking about it a little bit more, and they called me back a week later, and then I'm like, well, let's talk. And next thing you know, I'm making this decision to sell my business. One part of it was I wanted to make sure that my current staff all had a job, all had a job at the rate that they were being paid at by myself here. And that the company, you know, paid weekly instead of biweekly to their temps, because I always believe in paying weekly and a few other, you know, things as well. But wanted to make sure I was selling to a good company. But then outside of that, I'm like, got to go for it. Talk to my wife, talk to people that I have faith in their opinion and you know, just kind of following my heart. Taking a big swing at 57 to invent something that needs to be invented in Des Moines and other areas of, of the state. So, yeah.
So you kind of went a little bit with there's a pattern there, because when I worked with you, you had another nonprofit.
Yeah.
That was a whole race.
Yeah.
That would raise funds to build orphanages in
In Welcome, South Africa. I went to South Africa with three other people from my church. Heard about, you know, this AIDS epidemic going on in Welcome, South Africa. And when I got there, they were pre-digging children's graves. And until you see 25 pre-dug little graves, you really, you know, you have to kind of take a step back and go, what am I doing? I mean, really, what am I doing? And you can ignore it, you know, you can be like, oh, that's too bad. Or you can do something about it. And I've always been a guy that I think when opportunities kind of present themselves, even if it costs you some money, somebody's trying to tell you something. And so that's, I at that time, I don't believe it or not, I'm an Ironman. So I've done a full Ironman, two or three halves, and then about 25 other triathlons. But But I knew a lot of people, a lot of athletic people, and I found out that one of my friends ran across the state, but not up and down, but the diagonal or horizontal part, diagonal, whatever.
Horizontal
part. Uh-huh. And and so talked to the DOT and found some advice here or there, and I started Relay Iowa.
Right.
It cost me $5,000 to make $3,000. again, I am a business guru. Then the next year it cost $5,000, and I think we made about another $5,000. And then after that, we started making more money, and it's about a 12-to-1 to 15-to-1 ratio from the dollar to Velcom. So when I left, ten years of doing it, I gave it to the orphanage. Then some friends of ours, good friends, took it over, and it's still going.
Yeah,
still raising money. When I left, we had raised about $370,000, I think. Mm. That equates to about $1.5 million in Velcom money. We changed lives of people that we'll never see. And it feels good.
Does this feel like, from my perspective, feels like it was a natural kind of decision? I mean, you went a little bit with like your gut, right? Or your natural instinct of like wanting to help others.
Right.
Would you advise leaders and CEOs to, how much is the gut feeling? How much do you kind of pay attention to like,
well, your guts can get
the
you.
The universe,
your
I guess.
Gut can get you in trouble too.
Okay.
I mean, it could just be something you ate. I mean, so you wanna make sure that, hey, I've got this idea. Like the other day, I woke up at 3 a.m.
mm-hmm.
and I had an idea. Uh-huh. Okay. And so I wrote down the idea, and I kinda, you know, hey, this and that, and I'd be real excited about it. Okay. Uh-huh. But then what I have learned over time is take a break. And tell others about your idea.
Uh-huh, okay.
And then see about the feasibility of it. And just really, you always want people's who advice you trust. Because you can. I mean, oh, my gut's telling me to do this. Mm. But you got to be surrounded by other people. Because if you're just following your own instincts,
uh-huh.
that without any advice, you know, and then after you get the advice and you still want to go for it, even if there's risk involved, then do it. Nothing worth accomplishing has zero risk.
Right.
Risk is part of it. I'm over 200,000, of my own money in this job rights thing. Mm-hmm. I've been propping it up for a little while now.
Yeah.
Billy Rain's not a millionaire, so it hurts. But the good it does far outweighs that hurt. But the advice is you can't keep doing this.
Mm.
And so I have to figure out how to raise money for
uh-huh.
it, because my ability to talk to people, my ability to reason with people is a gift.
Right.
And I have to be able to utilize that gift to help others. And that's what I'm trying to do.
So once you're in it, you have to be willing to take that load and say, okay,
you know,
this depends on me getting.
It's one of the things. I mean, that's what I believe in. I mean, some people are great leaders and they don't believe any of that. You know, I always tell people there's two ways you can start a not-for-profit.
Uh-huh.
And I've started it wrong both times. there's one way that you can say, I have an idea, mm-hmm. and I need you to give me money. Mm-hmm. And if I get enough money, I will implement this idea.
Right.
That's the smart people do it that way. Mm-hmm. The other people say, I have an idea.
I'm going to put money behind it.
I have to put money behind uh-huh. it and prove that my idea
yes.
will work.
Uh-huh.
I've proven my idea has worked and will work and does work, But now I have to convince others, you know, 2.5 years into it, that it's worth giving money towards to help your fellow human beings work and get to work. And so yeah, so that's, you know, that's what I've done. I don't pay myself anything. I'm a volunteer. Mm-hmm. I don't need to pay myself this year for any of it, but I do need to raise money for it.
Right.
And that's, hopefully I can do that.
It seems like any project that you start, you know, it eventually, however slow it takes, it eventually does work, right? Like eventually you make it into a successful thing. So there's
eventually, yes.
So there's persuasiveness, right? There's got to be some, how much does a leader have to be persuasive? Where's the power of?
Well, all leaders are salespeople,
right?
At the core. I mean, leaders are selling people on ideas or selling them on success and what success can look for and look like. We're sales leadership is sales sometimes. I mean, great leaders. Winston Churchill, for instance, he had to sell the idea to England to not give up. I mean, uh-huh. while they're being bombed into oblivion. Uh-huh. That's sales. I mean, that is, hey, it might be easier to give up, but you don't want to know what it looks like if you do.
Mm.
And so, let's not give up. Let's never give up.
Uh-huh.
You will fight until the last man. That sort of leadership, at its core is an idea that you have to sell to people. And that's what a lot of leadership is. You have to be the kind of individual that people trust. And whether it's a popular idea or not a popular idea, you have to be the kind of person that can deliver it and understand that there's consequences for either the popularity or the unpopularity. It's not always a rose garden.
Right.
And so you have to be, I mean, if you want to be a leader, you have to understand you might have the title. We have tons of title leadership that people wouldn't follow through the bathroom.
They
will not follow titles. They follow content of character leaders. They will judge your character. Great leaders have character inside that people are studying and analyzing and deciding if they're going to follow it or not.
What's the best advice that you've ever gotten and the worst?
Well, I've been fortunate. I mean, to be around great men and men that did not have to raise their voice to get you to do things for them. I've been around, I mean, in my business career, Austin Palmer, name him. I admire him and have always admired him. He has a very successful business here in Des Moines, and he's a great leader. I'd trust him with his life. I would take a bullet for that guy. He's never asked me to. But his honesty and integrity, his way about him as far as selling ideas and his guts to break away from a very nice job to start over again takes nerve and takes guts, and I respect that, and I respect him. Had a great football coach. You know, a lot of people say my coach was a great leader, or my coach was not a great leader. I mean, when you are assigned and to be in front of people, that's a tough assignment, and you can be you're going to be judged harshly one way or another. And so I was fortunate that I had a coach that never had to raise his voice, never cussed, believed in meditation a little bit, in the power of the mind. And we had a heck of a team every year. I mean, and again, take a bullet for that guy.
Right.
So when you think about people that you are really enthused about, you know, they have traits that you know are they're honest, they have integrity.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need to raise their voice to get you to listen.
Mm-hmm.
And I respect that.
So what's something that you took away? So that when you said your coach, it reminded me to my wrestling coach, Coach Fox.
Yeah.
And he treated me, you know, at 15 years old with the value of, you know, I felt like a human in front of him. He didn't look down on me.
Yep.
He had all the age and the know-how and, you know, experience and everything to treat me, you know, less than. But every time I think about him, I felt equal to him. He treated me with such respect that, like he's always in our mind.
People look in the eye. You don't have to worry that you tell them something, they're going to tell it to somebody else. You know, they're trustworthy. And they're not, if you do something stupid, they're going to tell you did something stupid.
Mm-hmm.
But not in a way that's going to make you feel stupid. I guess. But there's leaders in every situation. I mean, I don't know anything about chess, for instance.
Uh-huh.
So I would not be a leader in chess matches or anything like that. But there are leaders, you know, that they're just naturally, they're talented at what they do. That's part of a leadership. And they are somebody that might bring you along and teach you, you know, and understand that they're trying to have a positive effect on you, you know. Then there's military leaders, you know, command and control. There are people that, you know, I am going to command you to do this because it's going to be something you don't want to do. Sometimes in the military. Now, they are respected, but they're not, a lot of them aren't touchy-feely, you know, or anything because they have a difficult job of sending you to something that you might die at. So there has to be a command and control type of thing. Sometimes people from the military, they get out of that situation and it's a little tougher for them because they're not being commanded anymore. They're being a little bit more asked, and their decision making has to change with that in corporate America, if you will. And sometimes that's a difficult change. So
What's the bad advice that you've gotten?
Any advice that's money, just money driven. There's nothing else behind it but how to make more money.
Right.
Turn and burn, you know. Hey, just hire them, and if they last for 30 days, great. And if they don't, well, no big deal. Get somebody else in. Just burn through people. Sometimes you can make money doing that. But I couldn't do it. I mean, I'm not that guy. I'm more of a relationship guy. And I'd rather have a long-term person and not make as much money. Hence why I'm always broke. No. But that's what I would rather go with than the turn and burn.
So I remember when you first, you know, promoted me to my first kind of manager role.
Yeah.
And I think like 6 months in, I don't know if you remember, but I was like, I don't think I'm your guy. Do you remember?
I don't know, man.
I remember sitting there because I was struggling, you know, because not everybody can be a leader.
Yeah.
That's a known fact, right? Like not everybody's meant to be a leader.
Right.
So when you have a young leader, what would you give? What advice would you give somebody that you know has potential to leadership?
Yeah.
Any like three pointers that?
Patience. Be good to yourself a little bit. Understand that what you're doing is a difficult job, and people won't just follow you because you're their manager. You have to be calm. Decisions don't need to be made immediately. Nobody's going to die, and if you put a person out or don't put them out within that hour or whatever. So just understand we're not splitting the atom in most jobs. We're just trying to get an activity done.
Uh-huh.
When a leader, especially a young leader, feels disrespected, one of the first reactions they have is anger. And how dare you? Young leaders need to understand that that is not the reaction that you should have. It's natural reaction, but good leaders, they take a step back, they take a breath, they might go back to it the next day. The person that is aggravating them, they might send them home for that day or that hour or that whatever, just so that the situation can be approached differently the next day. It's amazing what a good night's sleep will
right.
be. Sleep on it. And then come back. And then if the answer is I have to be tougher or I don't have to be tougher or I have to, your answer will come to you. But the worst decisions I've ever made were ones that I made immediately. Think about things. It's different, you know, fight or flight. It's different if it's some sort of total emergency and you just are like, I don't have any time. But most, 95% of all the decisions you will make in your life are decisions that a nice night's sleep will help you make
will
the right
help
one.
You in line.
Yeah.
So do you have any like horror stories from a supposed leader or supposed person that had a position of leadership that you saw them and you're like, that was such a bad decision and this is what happened? And is there like any success story that you're like, man, I saw this person do this and it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, there's a natural tendency that if somebody's a top producer in sales, if somebody's a really good salesperson, sometimes people will say they're a really good salesperson. They're going to teach others how to sell. They're going to have what it takes to be a sales manager and a sales leader. Some of the worst sales leaders have been some of the best salespeople. Because sometimes greed is good. Some salespeople tend to be, that's mine. And it is extremely difficult to teach them, no, this is the team's. You're getting paid on what the team does, not just your own individual. And that lesson can be a very expensive one for companies.
Okay.
Your best salesperson sometimes should just be your best salesperson because they might lack some of the empathy that it takes to be a good leader, some of the organizational skills that it takes to be a good leader, and just some of the let me take you alongside and show you how I got to where I am today. Not saying there hasn't been good salespeople that were top, you know, top at their game and then they became good sales leaders. But I have had some of the worst managers in my life that were very good
sales
people or good at one thing. Just let them be good at one thing.
Right.
Some companies almost make it a requirement you know, hey, this and this, if you become the sales manager, you're going to be paid on the team. If you don't, I'm going to lower your percentage because you're making too much money the way it is individually or stuff. It de-emphasizes the sales and the sales leadership. And so many of these owners are like, what did I do?
Right.
I'm making less than what I was when this person was just.
I've seen it in the manufacturing industrial world where, you know, they have an excellent employee, everything, ethics, you know, they've been doing the job for 10 years.
Yeah.
And like George is great. He knows the jobs, all of the jobs. He's trained people. Mm-hmm. He's great, attended everything, like rock star. Let's promote him.
Right.
And then he becomes a bad leader. He becomes the worst. He, you know, they don't have the emotional intelligence to handle situations. So maybe not everybody needs to be promoted.
Right. Exactly. If they're really good at
let
something,
let them just be good at that.
Let them be good at it, you know, and not everybody's cut out for, and I say cut out, that is the wrong, it's just another business attribute, you know, it's no more valuable or less valuable sometimes than the person that's just really good at sales, or really good at this. If they've expressed an interest in leadership, give them a little bit of it and see how they do with it. But if they're not expressing any interest and you're kind of forcing the issue, that's a big mistake that a lot of business owners make because they think that that person will share what they have learned over the years. And a lot of salespeople, they're not in sharing.
What about a success story where you saw this great leader, you know, take some action or take decision making that just kind of left an impression in you?
Well, is this where I fill in the blank for you, Amner? I mean, is this what we're getting at? Is this where we're going?
No, not at all.
What? Did you just wink at me or something? I have been around people I'm extremely proud of.
Yeah.
You're one of them.
Oh, thank you.
That have had ideas, have come to me with ideas, that you've wanted your own business was not a surprise to me. You talked to me about that.
Right.
And I think I was verbally, here's what it takes and here's the money it takes.
Yeah.
And here's this and that, but I'll support you.
Yeah. You took me serious. You didn't laugh in my face, which at that time. Yeah.
Because and your idea of, I remember, I mean, we talked about the idea of kind of specializing in being good at with different groups and everything, and you've done a marvelous job of that. You know, and I'm very proud of you with
Thank
that.
Thank you.
And you've grown as a person, and every year you've grown, and I've appreciated that. I've had that happen with other people that I'm extremely proud of that I have been with and were fortunate enough that they took my advice or they grew as a human being, and now they're more successful than what they were with me. Now, that's not a huge level to get over, but it does make me very proud.
Thank you.
I'm very, I don't get my joy from my individual making money or those sorts of things. I get my joy from helping people and having people that I have helped be successful. That's where my joy comes from. And so that's...
there is something to be said about watching people that you care for flourish. Mm-hmm. And, I like to credit you for, a lot of the style of management and just kind of the way that I carry myself sometimes.
The way you dress, because I dress just like you. So, I definitely could take credit for that.
The $20 here on the table there. Thank you for the... No, but I appreciate your words. They really mean a lot to me. Yeah. I name you a lot as a mentor. I always say, if I can call Bill and give them a specific situation, like, what would you do?
Yeah.
So I appreciate you being available to me. Mm-hmm. But you're also an entrepreneur, right? I mean, you've started nonprofits from the ground up, businesses. Mm-hmm. What's like three, from an entrepreneur point of view, what's the top three things that you would advise an entrepreneur that is probably already got something going and is ready for that next step, maybe a little growth or hire somebody? Or like, what are three main things that you're like, you got to have these three things?
Yeah. You got to know it's going to take more time than what you ever thought it was going to. It's going to take more money than what you ever thought it was going to.
Right.
And it's going to test your patience and your belief in yourself to accomplish something that you're trying to accomplish. Your biggest competitor sometimes is yourself and your own self-doubt. I deal with self-doubt all the time. And you try to push that down. But it is something that people that take chances, that invest their own money in themselves and in their ideas, there's people that are there to support you, but there are also people there by supporting you saying, what are you doing, man? I mean, are you sure? You know, and sometimes you're not. So is the risk worth the reward at the end of the day? Only the individual knows that. Mm. Only your entrepreneur knows that it is the risk worth the reward, because the other part about it is, you know, what else, when you start going down this path, your failure is an option. Mm. You know, this whole idea we have from movies to, you know, just modern day, you know, belief systems that failure is not an option.
Yeah.
Second place is just the first loser, you know. And I gotta tell you, it is an option. I mean, it is. And if it's not, then you're not, I mean, there's sayings for this, but you're just not taking enough risk if it's not. You know, this whole drive thing that we're doing, the whole job rides thing, there's risk to it. I mean, we started to the wheels rolling 2.5 years ago, and they haven't stopped rolling.
Right.
Those wheels take gasoline. Those wheels take repairs. Those wheels get destroyed at intersections, and you have to figure out how I'm going to buy more wheels. And if I don't buy more wheels, 15 people are going to lose their job.
Yeah.
And so there's risk to it. And the reward is just a fellow human being saying, thank you, man. Without you, I wouldn't have a job. I really appreciate it. Without you, my family is grateful. I'm able to pay my child support that's been hanging over my head for a while. There's stories about humans that we're giving rides to.
Yeah.
And the reward is those fantastic things. There's no financial reward to this. Mm-hmm. My wife can tell you that. but there's a greater reward, you know, that human decency reward that I always tell people. I mean, I'll tell you this story here after real quick.
Uh-huh.
But I come from the system. I mean, I do. I come from five kids. I'm the youngest of five. My dad left the day after Christmas when I was 2 years old. My mom begged him to stay for Christmas Day, and then he left the day after to run off with a gal who he got pregnant and ran off on her, and then kind of was running ever since. But my mom didn't have a job. She didn't have a career. She didn't have anything. And so she had to put herself through LPN school and then RN school. And in the meantime, we were on food stamps. I just remember mom whipping out the food stamps, not really understanding what they were, but mom always being, you could tell, she's a little embarrassed about
right.
it. And I remember have food stamps anymore. because she said, this is the last food stamp I'll ever need. And I get that feeling every day in the van. It's people with the hand up, bettering themselves, getting out of a system that they don't want to be in, whose circumstances sometimes they've caused and sometimes they haven't caused. But it's a circumstance that they want to get out of, and job rides gives them the opportunity to do that. So that's the reward,
right?
Is that memory over and over again.
And that's, you know, in a way, that's what I meant a little bit by, like, kind of going with your gut. Because when something makes you feel good, from what you're doing for, like, a living, and or you found something that contributes to others, that's something to not ignore, right? Like, that's something to, like, pay attention to that, because that means that you're onto something.
I don't care who you are. I don't care who your God is. I don't care what you believe. You know, I'm probably a little more karma related. I like to say I'm a Christ follower. I follow Christ and the book of Mark, because he's more human to me than some of the other books. But whoever you follow, whatever your belief system is, you know, the universe might be trying to tell you something. And you risk ignoring that, you know, at your own peril. And I believe that. I mean, I just do. Not everybody's belief system. But when the universe puts people in front of you, pay attention to that human being, because they might have something good to say. That's my belief.
And you're out there, and this is part of leadership. You're out there knocking on doors saying, I need to raise some money for this company.
By the way, it's coming. My knock on your door.
Yes. I mean, but that's part of it. And I think it's like the humbleness to say, it's on me to make this happen.
Right.
Whether I've been a business owner or ran teams or built other businesses or, you know, have all this tenure, you still have to be the one.
Yeah. This
knocking at the door.
This CEO woke up at 5:15 this morning, got in my truck and picked up three people at three different places, and took all three to work. We pick up people at different hotels that are homeless. We pick up people all over the place. The title means very little. It's what you do, you know. Somebody wants to hold somebody responsible if things go wrong. So they give you a title to say you're to blame if this goes wrong.
Yeah.
But it's you gotta believe in what you're doing, you know. Otherwise, it's just another job.
Just
a lot of people
title.
Just doing you know, whatever and stuff, and that's okay. But if you want to be a leader, if you want to make a difference, you gotta do it. I tell the story, you know, my wife with her cancer, I mean, it's getting real personal, but, my wife with her cancer, she showed me some fantastic leadership. I mean, and, the way she handled it. But I always tell people that, when you get hit by news like that, divorce rates, for people that get very sick, spike. You think it's just the opposite, you know, through richer, poorer, through health and all that good stuff.
Till death
do his part, you know.
Wow.
But it actually spikes. And because what happens is either you're all in or you're out when the bad news comes. It's a real character check, if you will. And it's a physical decision. I mean, it is. And I went all in and was rewarded with some of the best years of my life and of my marriage, and it was incredible. Some people take the other approach to that, and I think that they find that that might not have worked out the best for them. But but it's decisions. Mm. We make them every day.
Right.
Some are more valuable and more meaningful than others. But anyway, yeah. Either you're all in or you're out is what I tell for leadership as well.
And you got to be willing to do the littlest task and the smallest of things.
Oh, yeah. Because you got the title. I mean, some of the best leaders make the coffee in the morning. I mean, it's just some people, I got the title, so you're working for me. And, and sure, people work for you. Most of them have pretty high turnover.
Right.
And most of them are not people that you'd take a bullet for or anything. Might key their car. But the people that you take bullets for are the people that are making the coffee.
Right.
I mean, in my opinion. So, yeah.
Well, we're going to leave it at that, Bill.
Yeah.
And if anybody needs to get a hold of Bill Rain with Job Rides.
Yeah, jobrides.org. Bill@jobrides.org.
Bill@jobrides.org.
Yeah.
Or just message us, and then we'll connect you with Bill.
You bet.
And,
yeah.
I'm sure Job Rides is going to, you know, complete. I mean, you're getting some good response as well.
So the need is, I mean, you have this product where the need is astronomical.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I have a laundry list of people that need rides.
Uh-huh.
That's not the issue. The issue is that, the more rides you give, the more money it costs. And without backers,
right,
you end up losing money with every ride.
Right.
And so you need people to believe in what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
And if I can maybe convince a few people to believe in what we're doing, I'll give you this example before you cut me off.
No. Go ahead.
One example. So when we put 15 people in a van for 1 year, okay, and they're making $16.50 an hour, we've raised $523,000 of payroll. And it's not payroll that, oh, they just switched to another job. No, these folks, 90% of all of our riders say that they would not be working without the job ride system. So this is found payroll. These are folks that have gone off unemployment,
yes,
you know, roles long ago.
Uh-huh.
These are the folks that need the hand up, and they're willing to work. They just need a way of getting there.
Right.
And in Des Moines, unfortunately, we're one of the few ways that they can get there. You know,
which
I have people that are making $16 an hour, and they're paying Uber $200 a week, and just so that they can work. And I'm like, what?
That's crazy.
That's crazy. Uh-huh. That's crazy. You know, but that's the system we have. I mean, when we need to change it. I mean, we just need to change it. There, as a human being, we just have some responsibilities here, in my opinion. And
all this payroll become payroll. They become taxpayers, payroll taxes.
Exactly,
so then
it
goes back
my friend.
And
it's less of a social net that they have to be on.
Right.
It's less food stamps.
Uh-huh.
It's less of all of those social things. They don't want to be part of the social network.
Uh-huh.
They want their own piece of the pie. But unfortunately, we just don't have it set up for them to get their piece of the pie. Job Rides is helping them get the piece of their pie. And the return on the investment is, I think it's like 6 to 1. I mean, we've raised over $5 million of payroll over the last couple of years. For our riders, there aren't a lot of social services to homeless people and to people getting out of prison that can brag that right. there's a return on it.
Yes.
I could hand out blankets to people so they stay warmer at night when they're sleeping outside. I prefer to give them jobs.
Right.
And so that they can better themselves because that's what they want to do.
Right.
And so, yeah, sorry, I'd get a little fired up. But
no, I mean, that's because yeah. at the end of the day, a lot of how the system runs is if the bottom line is met.
Right.
If the bottom line, if it affects the bottom line in a positive way, yeah. this actually does because yeah. it creates.
And we stay with them as they move up. So many social systems, as you move up, you're dropped. Uh-huh. So let's suppose that you have a family of a couple of kids, and you're making $48,000 a year. So you're on Hawkeye. Okay. Uh-huh. Of the plan that helps out families that are lower income. But then somebody comes along and gives you a raise. It's like, you do a great job. I'm going to give you a raise. I'm going to have you make $53,000. All of a sudden, Hawkeye drops you.
Right.
Hawkeye's worth, you know, $14,000. Okay, so all that raise has gotten somebody is they've just lost, you know, $10,000. That's what that raise has gotten them. That's what the social system sometimes, well, for better or for worse, not designed, I'm sure, to do that. But folks that are trying to get themselves up on the rungs of life have to have some of these decision-making processes yes. that other folks, they just do not understand. You got a raise and you're going to turn it down?
Yes.
Well, yeah. Because if I don't, my kids are going to have nothing for health insurance. I'm going to have to pay this health plan X yeah. amount of money. And someone might say.
Or the daycare.
Or the daycare. Or whatever else you got. So I'm not here to fix every social problem in the world.
Yeah.
I take people to work. I mean, that's what I do. But I follow them. Mm-hmm. I follow them from the Fort or from Fresh Start or from their hotel mm-hmm. and to their low income housing, so that they don't lose their job while they're moving up. Uh-huh. We don't want people to lose out after 3 months of doing well, simply because they now can afford something better.
Right.
That circle needs to be broken. Job rides helps to break that circle. Yeah. Anyway.
Well, we'll hopefully get some people to reach out and connect with you. And
yeah.
I'm sure you and I will be talking more and more.
Oh, yeah.
And thank you for coming.
We'll hug it out.
Thank you for giving us all this advice. Again, I feel, you know, privileged and honored to have somebody like you. Just a phone call away. So
you bet. I greatly appreciate it.
So yeah. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Oh, yeah. You bet. Sounds good, bud.
Thank you.
Thank you.